Good morning. Welcome to the 2011 Retail Marketing Virtual Conference and Expo presented by Retail Online Integration Magazine. My name is Melissa Campanelli, and I'm Editor-in-Chief of Retail Online Integration, and I'm pleased to welcome you to our opening keynote titled The Customer is in Control, sponsored by Bridgeline Digital. A power shift is occurring this year as retailers cede control to consumers. Yes, the customer has always been king, but this power shift is about more than just a healthy respect for consumer purchasing power. It's about the customer aggressively taking control, aided by the web, social media, and smartphones. In this morning's session, you'll hear about what consumers want based on research and how retailers are changing to meet their needs. To guide us through this great presentation, we have two speakers, Bernie Brennan and Laurie Schaefer. They're co-authors of a great new book called Branded, How Retailers Engage Consumers with Social Media and Mobility. Bernie's also a consultant and investor in retail-related technology and the former chairman and CEO of Montgomery Ward, Save a Stop, Inc., and Household Merchandising. He was also formerly the chairman of the National Retail Federation. Laurie, besides being the co-author of Branded, is also the executive advisor for SAS Institute's retail practice. She's also an entrepreneur with 25 years of experience in retail and consumer packaged goods technologies. Was CEO of MarketMax and president of SAS Global Retail. She also serves on the board of directors of several retail and technology companies, as well as the NRF. Before we get started, however, let me point out a few tips on how to make the most of today's live presentation. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the Help button at the bottom of the console, or let us know via the Ask a Question box. To get a PDF version of the slide presentation for future reference, click on the Download Slides button on the console. If you'd like to submit a question to our speakers today, you may do so at any point during the presentation by using the Ask a Question box. I'll do my best to get to everyone's questions in the allotted time. If you leave the session at any time or would like to view it again later, you can access the entire presentation from the auditorium in the Retail Marketing Virtual Conference and Expo on-demand environment. Without further ado, please welcome Bernie.
Thank you, Melissa, and good morning, everybody. We're pleased to join you this morning to discuss the reality of the digital retail world and the fact that the customer is in control. In fact, 1 year ago at this time, Laurie Schaefer and I were well into writing our book, Branded, How Retailers Engage Consumers with Social Media and Mobility. And in the introduction, we made the statement, customers are speaking, are you listening? We also discussed the fact that the customer was in control. So today we'll share with you why this statement is so accurate. We'll discuss retail successes and social media and mobility and provide a view of the digital landscape going forward. We have a really very new and exciting retail paradigm. We have a valuable consumer-driven communication because customers are now using these channels to communicate their views of a retailer's merchandise, quality, service, and value. Customers are tech-savvy. They're constantly on the web. They're on social media, social networks, on their mobile devices, right down to the aisles of the retailer's stores. So what we say and we believe, and it's true today, is retailers must bring their stores to the customers. They can't wait for the customers to come to them because the customers can find information digitally and then make their own decision relative to what channel to shop. So retailers must engage with their customers, and the fact is those that do will have a great opportunity. So we believe, and we've seen this with the retailers we've studied, is a great opportunity for retailers who engage with customers with social media mobility to build brand equity and market share, and those that don't will be left behind. Social media, obviously, is what the subject is. The evidence is clear. We have a fundamental change in the way that people communicate today. The empirical evidence is compelling. The total number of social media users in the U.S. in the aggregate exceeds the total population. Globally, social media users are approaching 1 billion. And today, dominant social networks like Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter continue to grow. So new social networks are emerging at the same time and already thriving. And they represent large numbers of consumers, and I'll discuss those in a few minutes. And finally, social media via mobile has exploded, starting with the growth in smartphones and tablets. And one statistic that's impressive is that Apple has downloaded 10 billion apps to date, with many competitors who are on the chase. Facebook is the leader in social media. It's about 70% of the total social media network usage. And Facebook has 8 million new users every second throughout the world. End of 2010, Facebook had just under 600 million users worldwide. Today, it's roughly around 620 million and projected to reach 1 billion by 2012. One half the total U.S. population are Facebook users, and one half of them log on daily. The number of the users in the U.S. on Facebook has grown 246% in 2 years, from under 50 million to over 150 million. And, of course, Facebook Connect is a good example of some of the attributes that Facebook has added using the famous like button and expanding the communication throughout not only the Facebook retailers but customers' Facebook pages. Facebook has over 200 million mobile users who are twice as active as the other users. So the power of the convergence of social media and mobile is absolutely amazing. Social media and retail. We said retail customers embrace social media, and it really has enhanced their control with retailers. Social commerce has expanded with Facebook selling, with creative selling, the growth of mobile, and the evolvement of payment systems, and social commerce will continue to grow. Group buying, which is a new paradigm, the Groupon, social living, the two of them alone have 800 million members already and are rapidly growing, and new competitors are entering that market. The flash sales business, the Guild, Outlook, Rue La La, and others are expanding categories and project to do over $2 billion in 2011. Social gaming. Social gamers bought $2.2 billion in virtual goods in 2009. This will increase to $6 billion by 2013. Location-based marketing has proved to be successful in the early stages and has enormous potential. And finally, personalized boutiques such as Boutique.com and Polyvore are making major impacts on retail, and Lori will talk more about that. Now moving into mobile. There are over 5 billion mobile devices globally, equating to almost 70% of the population, with many countries already exceeding 100% of the population with their mobile devices. The U.S. is nearing the 1-to-1 ratio of mobile devices to the population, but the big breakthrough is the growth in smartphones and tablets. There will be 110 million smartphones in the U.S. by 2015, and there will be 44 million tablets in the U.S. by 2015. So it's here. The customers have the information. They're moving forward. And so mobile has been increasing uses for customer benefits that I'll talk more about. It's both cross-channel and its own channel. But think about it. Who has more control than a customer with a mobile device? Uses of mobile, and this relates to retail, are compelling. Mobile's grown from a store locator to continuous improvements and benefits to the customer and the retailer. Customers, of course, focus on customer coupons and promotional events, and many retailers are implementing digital couponing chain-wide. And this is really in early stages, but enormous potential. Location incentives are very effective. Breakthrough benefit for both customers and retailers, and we'll talk more about that with the retailers. Product information is still what's critical, from assortment to features to price in stock. Without this information, price is meaningless. You really have to know about the product. And m-commerce continues to grow, as do all channels. All-channel commerce results in use of mobile, and it's just going to continue. M-commerce is early on, but people are assessing it through mobile, and we think it's going to be very effective. And mobile payments are on the brink of a broad consumer use. Starbucks, one of our case studies, was one of the early leaders in mobile payments. There's two numbers. There's one number on the right side and two facts that I think are compelling. 33% of web customers are using mobile to enter e-commerce, and 33% of retail store visits are driven by mobile. Just think about that, the effect it has on physical stores. Now, I talked basically about the facts, how fast this is moving in social media and mobile, but I think it's important to step back and talk about something we studied early on when we wrote our book, Relatives to Strategy and Culture, because our view is Social media is an amplification of a company's strategy and culture. It's not a substitute for a coherent strategy, and we've seen some try that, and it has failed. The retailer must have a compelling proposition, and if they do, they'll be very successful. It's different. This is a different world in terms of openness. You can't do all these things and be amplify and communicate and be transparent without opening up your company internally and externally. And that involves hiring, inspiring, empowering associates who really understand this and who live it. It's a big change for retail, but the results will be compelling. We've seen people that have done it already. So those retailers that engage with customers will improve brand equity and market share. So the branded leaders, we had 8 leaders that we focused on in our book, Branded. We're not going to go through all those, but just one comment on the first two. Starbucks today has 21 million followers on Facebook, is also a leader on Twitter. Zappos has 2 million followers on Twitter and is basically tied with Whole Foods, far above any other retailers in the industry. So I'll focus now on a few retailers that we spent time with, we wrote about, and we believe are really proving that they've engaged customers with social media and mobility. The first is Macy's. Macy's has two great brands, Macy's and Bloomingdale's. Today we'll talk about Macy's. As you know, the company has been consolidating for a number of years, and finally now is leveraging the Macy's brand on a national scale with enormous marketing power. Recognizing they've gone national, at the same time, they had a number of chains such as the Filene's, Marshall Field's, who are very strong in their marketplace, and they've put in place something called My Macy's, which is localization, focusing on localization of merchandise and service needs. And they're now beginning to market. Their first test was in Chicago with college students about 2 months ago, and it was very successful. The point is, My Macy's means Macy's is to you in your neighborhood or your city, and this is what it represents. Macy's.com is the hub because that's where the customer goes first to get the information. Then they make the decision where they want to shop. They started slowly on Facebook but ramped up rapidly. They now have just under 2 million users, and we're confident they'll continue to grow rapidly. They're a multimedia marketer. So smartphones and iPads, they're really are enhancements to the fashion business, are an important part of their social media strategy. And Macy's was one of the pioneers in geolocation and continues to expand that area. Next was another large retailer and an old retailer, over 100 years old, JCPenney. It's going through major changes. They, like Macy's, centralized merchandising and focused on digital implementation. They focused on customer service. They focused on transparency and internal culture. They're using JCP.com, again, as their hub, no matter where the customer wants to shop. They now have the entire catalog, JCPenney catalog, on Facebook. And they're selling on Facebook, and the customer will decide whether they keep the entire catalog or they tailor it in some way. So they have leveraged the fashion offer the same way as Macy's through smartphones and iPads, and just the whole quality is enhancing the fashion offer. But I think that Penny made one big step that more retailers are starting to make, but they're really a leading edge. They're taking the digital store to the store itself. They have 200 stores now that have smart fixtures where the customer can go on, look at merchandise, interact socially, order merchandise, and that is exactly where the retail industry is going. They're using iPads in their jewelry departments, and we believe we'll see more and more of that in the entire retail industry. They're partnering with somebody called Star Dolls, which is a virtual environment for teenage girls, so they are going after this young customer. In fact, recent data shows that they're improving their market share with younger customers. So social media is working with them. And finally, Best Buy. Best Buy is a market share leader in consumer electronics, and they started something under Brian Dunn, their chairman, called the Connected World, and they've been implementing this strategy for a number of years. This is really unique. It's a $50 billion company, 50 years old, but it's entrepreneurial. They're a leader in product service and customer product and service in the consumer electronics industry, but the real point is they have an open culture. Started, as I said, with the CEO, and what they did is they leveraged their sales force, which averages 22 years old and understands more about this than we ever will. They empowered them. They let them start the Blue Shirt Nation. They let them lead innovation in Best Buy, and this is a major part of their success. They focused on accessibility so the customer could reach them any way they possible, localization. They have Facebook pages for every one of their stores, and personalization. And finally, they are also a leader in location marketing. In terms of QR codes, product information, they've been a leader in that area. They have an app they just introduced recently that has a picture of the product. Remember, this is fashion merchandise. They have a mobile app for e-commerce. They have 12 Forest, which is Twitter, plus the Help Forest, which evolved from the Blue Shirt Nation. They have Facebook Shopping, excellent information on Facebook. And finally, they've opened one of the first three connected stores that they just opened in the last 2 months that relate to taking digital all the way to the store. So the whole point here is this is about digital, but it's about openness, it's about transparency, connecting with customers, and we believe these are three excellent examples of companies that have done so. So with that, I'll turn it over to Lori, and she'll continue.
Thank you, Bernie, and good morning, everyone. I wanted to highlight a couple of innovative specialty retailers in terms of how they use mobile and social media to allow the customer to be in control of how and where he or she shops while enhancing customer loyalty. I also want to point out, while we have shown some very large retailers, and we're about to show some, I'd say, mid-sized retailers, what's interesting about these new ways of communication for consumers and also for the retailers is that for smaller retailers, whether you're one store or just a small .com site, by using these new methods of communicating, it actually levels the playing field for a lot of retailers because both social media and mobile are not expensive to get into, and it could present your company as a small retailer to be much bigger to the consumer. Now, given that we are just approaching a lot of the spring holidays, such as Easter and Passover and many others, it's appropriate that we also highlight 1-800-Flowers.com and its various gifting brands, such as Popcorn Factory, Cheryl & Company, Fannie Mae, and others. Jim McCann, who is the CEO of 1-800-Flowers.com and its founder, has a philosophy where he says, build relationships first and do business second. And that's exactly what 1-800-Flowers does, not only in its brick-and-mortar stores and its highly successful website, but also through its use of mobile and social media. While other retailers have certainly picked up on social and mobile features pioneered by 1-800-Flowers, such as their first mobile shopping application for the iPhone, and now they have a lot of other shopping apps and m-commerce, and also they were first to introduce a storefront on Facebook. 1-800-Flowers is usually one of, if not the first retailer, to adopt leading technology for its customers. 1-800-Flowers also takes full advantage of the Facebook Connect, which Bernie talked about briefly, and that's that infamous Facebook like button with the thumbs up. While shopping on the 1-800-Flowers website, consumers can now see Facebook birthday reminders so that they don't forget to buy gifts for friends and family. Also, if a consumer likes with that thumbs up button a particular product on the 1-800-Flowers website, it shows up in that person's Facebook newsfeed to remind friends and family of the particular gifts or floral arrangements that that person would like to get. When friends and families go to the 1-800-Flowers website, that person's picture actually pops up on their site next to his or her favorite items. So what's next? Group gifting is something the company is now working on, which is the ability to invite a number of a person's friends to chip in with a monetary donation to buy that individual gift. The key here is that 1-800-Flowers is constantly innovating to use mobile and social channels to build business relationships, to listen and to react to customers' ideas, and as a result, drive brand recognition and further cross-channel purchases. Another social and mobile leader is the young women's fast fashion specialty market, in the fast fashion specialty market is Wet Seal. Several years ago, Wetzel's developed its own social network called Outfitter, recognizing that teenagers, which is its target market, are very peer conscious. Wetzel developed Outfitter to allow teens to have their own virtual closet on the Wetzel site, and now also on Facebook and on their mobile application. Teens can build outfits from the Wetzel assortment and, more importantly, share those outfits on Facebook and Twitter for approval from their peers. Other teens can vote on their favorite outfits, and top-ranked outfits are displayed for everyone to see and buy. And let's face it, a teenager is more likely to buy an outfit that is most popular amongst her peers than she is from, let's just say, some of us that would be middle-aged buyers. Wetzel puts its customers in the role of fashion advisors, and that has helped it to build a following on Facebook over 1.3 million fans, which is actually larger than the fan base of many retailers 10 to 20 to 30 times their size in revenue. Furthermore, if you go on the Wetzel's website, it's now entirely set up around customer-designed outfits. So you don't search for individual products. It actually comes up with outfits that were designed by other teams, because that's the way customers want to shop. With the huge popularity of social gaming on Facebook, Wetzel is also beta testing its own social game called Chic Boutique, which lets consumers play a game on Facebook in which they become a Wetzel retail entrepreneur. And the way it works is something like this. The teen has to get merchandise from the Wetzel site and put it in the store, design outfits, get their teen friends to go onto their virtual Wetzel store, and as their sales increase, they accumulate points and virtual currency that they can then use to buy more stores, to move real estate, or spend it on marketing. And then in terms of how you win, the objective is to have hundreds of Wetzel stores and ultimately to build your own Wetzel empire. So other retailers are now also looking at ideas similar to what Wetzel's done, but Wetzel feels that with its innovative CIO and also the rest of their team, merchants and chief executive and so forth, that they're staying one step ahead. Bernie mentioned something called personal boutiques, and I'd like to now turn our attention a little more to this concept. And that is one of creating your own personal boutique for those fashion lovers, especially women, who, when social networking first came out, a number of fashion-oriented consumers jumped to these networks such as Polyvore that allowed them to create their own boutique. Well, during the holiday season for 2010, Google quietly introduced boutiques.com. And if you haven't looked at it, take a good look. The name Google doesn't appear anywhere on the site. Here's how it works. Boutiques.com is a personalized shopping site that analyzes and learns your fashion style and creates a customized boutique that suggests apparel, shoes, and accessories that you might like from a variety of retailers. A new technology called visual search is the brains behind the site. So instead of searching on text, as most of us have come to know in Google for, in boutiques.com, you first use the site to create your own personal boutique, and you are asked a series of questions by Google about your style preferences, you know, what kind of fabric you like, what silhouettes you like, what colors you like, your preferences for tops and bottoms, the looks of dresses, shoes, and accessories. And through visual search, boutiques.com then is able to learn your style over time, and it serves up clothing that fits your style from participating retailers. And then to purchase the item, you simply click on that item, and you're taken to a participating retailer's site. So customers are in complete control of the merchandise that they see and shop. Now think about the implications of visual search. Retailers get exposure they otherwise may not have gotten. And for Google, it's another way to collect a toll from retailers in return for that exposure. It's a whole new way to search. And if you think about a bigger implication, if this starts to take off for Google, customers are now going to expect visual search to appear on all retailers' websites. So with customers exhibiting control in so many internet-based venues, they're constantly creating information and opinions about a retailer's brands and products. And many of them are now using social media for questions and answers with the retailer, suggestions for complaints, and they're expecting the retailer to personally answer them. Then that brings me to the topic of social media analytics. Social media analytics, which has come out recently, provides a company with the ability to quickly sift through thousands of comments and social data and provide better insight for decision making. So think about social media as being a giant real-life consumer panel, and social media analytics being able to measure statistically significant results that allow you to take appropriate action based on consumers' reaction to your brand. Social media analytics allows a retailer to simultaneously monitor, listen, and analyze conversations within the internet world in Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, YouTube, blogs, online news, chat rooms, rating reviews, you name it. It allows companies to understand what is being said about their brands and those of their competition. And it can measure the volume of conversation, understand the sentiment of that conversation, whether it's positive or negative, and also identify which customers, bloggers, and reporters have the most influence. It can also quickly identify advocates and threats to a brand. And finally, social media analytics can predict future trends based on the volume and sentiment of what's being said. So if you take a look at the slide that's now up and just really focus on the bars and the colors, I realize there's a lot of detail in here. But if you look at this, we've all heard PR horror stories or on introductions of controversial products or promotion. And every company can have those. But what's important is how swiftly they take corrective action based on what their consumer base is saying. In this example, the retailer's brand was involved in an event which garnered national attention, and it wasn't positive. Hundreds of thousands of comments were left on social networks and in blogs about the event. Red showing negative sentiment, yellow being neutral, and green comments being positive comments. Here, the retailer quickly reacted to that negative sentiment, and within a matter of several days, had managed to turn public perception around to positive. Over time, tools like social media analytics show the volume of conversation indicated by the height of the bar, and that returned to normal levels in this example, and the overall sentiment about the brand then returned to positive. So by continually measuring sentiment around a brand, a merchandise category, or a product, analytics are able to predict future trends to allow a business to react before a problem becomes more widespread. So in this new world, over the next several years, what should retailers pay close attention to? Here, what we do is illustrate 10 trends in the social mobile world that continue to give the consumer even more control. First of all, ubiquity. Mobile devices are already omnipresent, and social media will soon also be, as it's being used on more mobile devices, more users are signing up by the minute, and social media will also more than likely soon be on most television sets. Social shopping for applications such as Facebook storefronts is also gaining popularity. Location-based apps such as Foursquare, Facebook Places, and the new Shopkick application continue to build their user bases, which fuel the consumer's expectation to be able to download mobile incentives for retailers in their local vicinity. Paper coupons and loyalty cards will soon be things of the past. If you look at group buying, such as Groupon and Living Social and other similar services, they also continue to build momentum, and they're also focusing now on becoming far more localized and far more personalized. Flash sales companies like Guild Group and Outlook are also among consumers' favorites, and they too are working now on personalization to each individual consumer. Social mobile gaming and digital currencies such as Facebook credits are growing very quickly, and now with 40% of all time being spent on Facebook is being spent playing games. And you might think the games are only played by kids, and that's actually not the case at all. The average profile of a gamer in the United States is a 43-year-old woman with children. So brands are beginning to advertise within these games or even considering sponsoring their own game, as Wetzel is experimenting with. Social mobile analytics we talked about, and it's going to continue to become more and more important as the volume of unstructured text in all of these social media channels continues to explode, and companies need to figure out ways to sift through all that data to better engage with their customers. Personalized advertising will start to allow brands to buy intelligent ads that are individually tailored to a specific consumer and that are able to follow that person around the internet, understand their preferences, and pop pages that consumers frequently visit. There's a few startup companies in this area. BSF Entree, I know, is one of them, which are allowing smaller retailers to also do their own personalized advertising. Mobile loyalty and incentives and payment applications, such as what Starbucks is already doing, and frankly, what a number of the Asian companies have been, or Asian countries have been doing for several years now, will soon be available on a broad scale basis. And finally, and I think most importantly, retailers need to integrate social and mobile technology into their brick and mortar stores to drive more foot traffic and to satisfy their customers who will expect integration into the brick and mortar world. As a customer, I don't think about I'm shopping on the web or I'm shopping on Facebook or I'm shopping in the store. I think about you as your brand, and I expect to be able to find your products anywhere that I go. So what does all this mean? We brought up Facebook before. Bernie talked about Facebook, and it just celebrated, believe it or not, its seventh birthday. And with 7 years under its belt, it's soon about to eclipse a billion users in about another year. Facebook is grabbing online advertising away from Yahoo, AOL, MySpace, and others, and it's disrupting the businesses of these established companies as well as those like Google. Facebook's grandiose aspirations are that every industry is going to be rebuilt around social engagement. And frankly, so far, their strategy is working. As its COO, Sheryl Sandberg, said in a recent Wall Street Journal article, news, health, finance, shopping, and commerce will be rebuilt by companies that work with us, meaning Facebook, to put social at their core. And Facebook is now a potential rival in electronic payments to eBay's PayPal, while the social network is also partnering with smartphone makers, and it will soon be in competition directly with Apple's iPhone and Google's Android, as a Facebook smartphone is rumored to be released shortly. So as the digital revolution continues to transform the world we live in, it also continues to fuel thousands of new companies and entirely new industries. Here are some of the new industries and startup companies that we believe are affecting the retail industry, most that are only a couple of years old. The charge is being led by Facebook, Apple, Google, and Amazon, whose cloud computing services and marketplace are now putting new retailers into business at a fraction of the cost of what it took only a few years ago. Amazon also recently invested $175 million into the group buying company Living Social, which competes directly with Groupon. So as a retailer, you need to pay attention to those four companies I just mentioned. Companies like eBay, Yahoo, AOL, Nokia, and even Microsoft are now competing for market share in spaces that they used to dominate. So whether it be group buying, flash sales, geolocation, social gaming, social shopping, or even social fashion, dozens of new companies have emerged and are fighting for the dominant positions among customers. So what will happen next? Well, none of us really know for sure, but what we can see are the trends, and we know that social and mobile are rapidly emerging as two new channels that today's retailers must invest in if they are to remain competitive in the eyes of the consumer. Yet a retailer must remember, as Bernie said, that social media and mobile are amplifications of its strategy and culture. And therefore, those retailers that rush into these without a coherent strategy may well fail. Retailers must be willing to adapt to a more transparent culture, empower their employees, and be willing to modify their organization to truly embrace these new customer choices for interaction. As we said in our book, Branded, and we say often when we're in the marketplace now talking to so many retailers and vendors, you can no longer expect the consumer to drive to your store or even find it online. You must now bring your store to your customer wherever he or she wants to shop. So with that, we would both like to thank you very much for your time, and we hope you found the presentation to be informative. And at this time, we'll open it up for questions, and I will turn it back over to Melissa.
Great. Thank you so much, Bernie and Lori. Some great information. Just to a reminder to all the folks listening, if you would like to get the book Branded, please check out the resources tab in the virtual environment, because we have it on sale there, and it's a great book. I've read it, and it's got some great examples and great information. So I just wanted to make that let everybody know that before we get started. We have a few questions, but I really do encourage you guys to ask questions because you have some great experts right here to help out, to answer any questions that you may have. The first question I'm going to just address to Lori is one listener was very interested in the average gamer profiles on the smartphones that you discussed about 43-year-old women. Could you kind of talk about that a little bit more, and also where did that stat come from?
Sure. The stats actually now, just to address where it came from, if you actually Google that on you should be able to find it. It's actually now on a number of different articles and so forth. I know we both, too, felt gaming was, you know, just kids and teenagers and so forth. And I'll give you some examples where I know this statistic is, you know, from just a personal standpoint, it has to be somewhat accurate. In that, I don't know if any of you out in the audience have the ability to keep Facebook on during the day, kind of in the background. But I will say that during my day, even to people that I know very well in, you know, frankly, some pretty significant positions in large companies, I've caught them playing games because on Facebook, if you're friends with somebody, it posts all their, you know, their activities. And, you know, suffice it to say, everybody that I'm talking about are women in their 40s and 50s. That are just engrossed in these games, like, you know, first it was Farmville, and then it was Cityville, and, you know, guys are playing Mafia Wars and games like that, and it's amazing. But that's one specific example personally that I'll cite. Another is, I'm a working woman. My two sister-in-laws are more homemakers, and they've raised their children. And in both cases, I see that they often spend sometimes 4 hours a day playing these games.
Wow.
In one specific case of one of my sister-in-laws, we finally had to turn off her feed just because the rest of us in the family were getting so many of these requests for jewelry or, you know, on some, I don't know, new site. I can't remember which one, but Fishville and Farmville and Cityville, it's amazing how many women middle-aged play these games.
And let me just ask you something, if you don't mind, Lori.
Sure.
How I have a little personally, I have a little trouble figuring out how retailers can kind of jump in on that. Can you just give some examples of how a retailer could benefit from the time that folks are spending on those games?
Sure. You know, it's still very new for retailers, so let me characterize it as that. You know, Wet Seal, among teens, they figured out a game that, because teens play games too, in their case, they figured out a game, the Chic Boutique, that young women, teens and 20-somethings, like to play games around fashion. And so they're experimenting, you know, very, you know, they're just trying out their own new game, and it's not that expensive, believe it or not, to build one. So that's one example. The Gap, recently partnered, and senior moment here, I'm forgetting which game it was, but when you went into the game, I tried it, and it was another fashion game, and when you went into the game to look at different sites, Gap stores came up, and you can actually fit the avatar with Gap jeans and different clothing that you picked out within that store. So in that case, Gap was experimenting with advertising on the game. A lot of things that are also happening are, and I think an easier way for retailers to start to see the value of this, something called Facebook credits is taking off. And what that is whenever somebody plays a game on Facebook, so those 40% of time spent playing games, they always want to level up to the next score. And the reason they play these games, it's kind of an ego boost with their friends if they can get the highest score. And in order to buy or to get to the higher scores, there's always on the games an ability to buy through Facebook credits things that will actually improve your score. For example, you might be able to, in Farmville, you can buy a new farm animal. And these Facebook credits, if you walk into any practically any grocery store now or Target, you see them for sale right with the gift cards. And also retailers within the game can advertise. There's always a place in the game you can go, and the retailer can say, hey, you know, you can spend $5 and get so many credits with, you know, with such and such a retailer. The other thing we've seen, there's a another company that's recently come out, I Feel Goods, which is a company for retailers, and we've seen retailers now either giving, say, 5% off on its website, or saying, or if you'd rather, we'll give you Facebook credits. And this I Feel Goods company manages all that for the retailer. And then in turn, the retailer, rather than giving 5% off, it's amazing how many consumers would rather get the Facebook credits to play the game. So those are just a few ways that retailers are starting to recognize the power of these games.
Great. Excellent. Thank you so much, Laurie. Let's see. Let me start asking some questions now to Bernie. You had mentioned in your presentation Facebook Connect. We have a couple questions about that. I guess it's also called Facebook Login to some folks. Can you kind of talk a little bit more detail about it and sort of discuss how it will play out in the future for retailers? Is it going to be bigger and better, or just kind of your feelings around it?
Well, I mean, I think the initial response to it has been tremendous, and the point of it is that the retailer is once a customer's on, you know, is liked, you're going down to the retailer's Facebook or onto the retailer's site, and of course you're on the customer's own Facebook, so you're expanding, you know, what you're looking at to your friend base, if you will, and you're enhancing the opportunity of the retailer to sell more. So I think from a retailer's standpoint, anything they can do to build a community, and, you know, the like button obviously is the hot one right now, but there are going to be more iterations of that that says it's like a store. If I open a store and I have 300,000 customers and I want to get to 500,000, how do I get to them? This is the approach you can do this digitally.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like it's a sort of a win-win for retailers. I'm not sure if you're aware of the Google Plus One news that's been out lately. Do you know anything about that? How does that tie into any of this?
I'm not familiar with that. Are you, Laurie?
Yeah, I am. It does tie in, and obviously Google is Google and Facebook are at war to try to figure this game out. I'm not aware of any retailers that are yet using it.
Okay.
But again, similarly to Facebook Lake, you want to kind of get this ability to be attracted to, let's say, the brand outside of just a Facebook or Google, but also, you know, throughout the web. And I think, you know, the one thing I will say about Facebook Like, while it's very popular, it's also a little controversial, because people are starting to figure out that when you like a product, that it does it goes out to your whole Facebook friends, which is the idea. But also, if you like a brand's Facebook page, then you start to get information about that brand in your newsfeed. And sometimes people want to look at a page, or they want to look at a product, but they don't want to hit like, because once they hit like, it's pretty much exposed to all their friends. So if you think about it, if it's a woman and it's some kind of a Victoria's Secret outfit or something, they sure as heck don't want to put a like button on something like that necessarily.
Interesting. Yeah, actually, one of our listeners has chimed in here that Stephen Groves from Profit Streams, he says that Plus One's not expected to extend much further, according to some analysts. So we'll see how that plays out. It's always interesting, though, to start see all these trends and stuff and how they play out, I find.
Well, I think the key to it is that whether it's, you know, Facebook-like or gaming, there are so many iterations out here that, frankly, are in early stages. But they're all geared to the same thing. How do I build loyalty? How do I build that customer base? And that's what marketing's all about.
Mm-hmm. You know what? Great point, Bernie. We actually did get a question about loyalty. One listener is interested in how, if you have any insight into how to build loyalty in on top of mobile or with the mobile area. Do you have any insight?
Well, I think when we talk about accessibility, we talk about localization, personalization. Obviously, loyalty is geared heavily to, well, both localization and personalization. And loyalty, let's take Starbucks as an example. If you're a Starbucks Gold Card customer and you're traveling around in the afternoon and you're in the vicinity of the Starbucks store, which everybody is, you'll get an offer of some kind because you're a best customer and you'll get a Frappuccino at a certain discount, et cetera. So the whole customer loyalty idea, which is still that customer who buys, shops twice as often and buys twice as much or more than that than anybody else, is pervasive in all of social media because that customer is a customer you really want to handle with tender, loving care. So we didn't speak about it specifically, but it's an integral part of social media.
Mm-hmm. Getting back to mobile, Bernie, have you seen a difference in the adoption of texting versus apps for mobile marketing? Maybe just going by the folks that you talked to for your
book. It really is. It's heavily demographic.
Ah, interesting.
You know, if you move, as an example, if you looked at Facebook and you looked at Twitter and you looked at even YouTube and then you looked at texting, the younger the customer, the higher the probability they're texting. If you see that's what kids are doing, texting. And so texting, if I'm a wet seal, mm-hmm. texting is much more important to me than someone is more on the right side, if you will, of the bell curve from a demographic standpoint. Hmm. So it's, you know, we studied all the social networks on a standpoint of demographics, and they do vary. The texting is definitely more the 16 to 25 year old.
And then I guess the apps would be for the older folks.
Well, apps.
Yeah.
If I can just add a point to what Bernie just said about demographics, the other thing too is, you know, at this point, while smartphones seem to be pretty much everywhere, you know, in reality, you know, based on Bernie's statistics that he talked about, smartphones are still, you know, really more used by, let's just say, folks over, you know, let's already at work, okay, so in the working group. And also they have demographic issues associated with them because they're more expensive and so forth. So, you know, from that perspective, until smartphones completely take over a standard phone, which is called a featured phone or a feature phone, texting really is the only way, to market. So I don't see texting going away for quite a while, and it may never go away. I think as a retailer, you have to have a combination of both.
It's really both age and economics, and they tend to go hand in hand in many cases.
Yeah. I mean, the listener has commented on that. I mean, apps, I guess, imply smartphone usage, and texting is more ubiquitous. So he was also wondering if there's a difference globally between the two. I think it sounds to me like, you know, it's texting you're always safe with. It's ubiquitous. It's going to be around. It's going to be everywhere. And then, apps, you can sort of add that on, as Laurie said.
And on top of that, globally, there's a difference also in terms of web use and mobile use. And you have certain countries that have lower web use because of economics, like a Mexico, but very, very, very high mobile use.
Mm-hmm.
So this growth in mobile is going to expand the web use more so on a global basis.
Okay, let's see. We did get a couple of questions about how these trends will apply for other companies. So we did talk about that a little bit before we got on the phone today, Bernie. Do you see that these trends working across all size companies, or can you kind of talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I think, in fact, we say in the book, and I firmly believe that social media can level the playing field. You know, if I were starting a small company today, let's say I even started it online, with the use of Facebook for the reasons we talked about, the use of Twitter from the standpoint of customer service, and some of the other tools that we talked about, I think it's an enormous opportunity for a small retailer to really establish a position in the marketplace. And, you know, that didn't exist before. If I opened one store, I couldn't afford to run the advertising in a market because of traditional costs. But today, through social media, you know, I can tailor to that customer that's shopping me and expand people that look like them and I think it's an enormous opportunity. So Facebook, because it's 70% of everything, is, you know, everyone should be on Facebook, but the fact is that, that it does vary. You know, the example of is Apple's and Whole Foods, who are really customer, you know, so focused on customer service. You know, they have 2 million followers both on Twitter. And that's because they're constantly talking to their customers and understanding what they want, et cetera. So it's a matter really of saying, who's my business? What's my business? Who are my customers? And what are the most effective tools beyond Facebook? Mm-hmm. And there's an opportunity for everybody. It's a matter of sitting down, looking at your strategy and your customer base, and going accordingly.
Let's see, along those same lines, do you see these trends working also for folks that are selling services, like a hotel room or a restaurant? We also have, you know, which are more experience-based, and we also have a listener from who's a book publisher who's,
sure,
who's wondering how kind of these tools can be translated into their business models.
Well, we can tell you as book authors how hard we worked on social media, and we found it to be effective. But the point of it is, you know, even though we said retailers are the cover, in fact, we found that many purchases of the book and the use of the book are, you know, with service companies, consumer product companies, even advertising agencies. But anyone who is interfacing with customers, directly with customers, whether it be a product or be a service, has the same opportunity. Think about the, you know, the entertainment, and think about travel and all the exciting things you can do there in terms of games and, you know, treasure hunts. And they're just, it definitely applies to all consumer products and services.
Do you have, a couple people are interested in the restaurant concept. Do you have any examples of how restaurants might use it? Or I don't know if you covered any of that in the book.
Well, we focused in the book only on quick service. We focused on Pizza Hut.
Oh, so that's great. So can you kind of...
And Pizza Hut started very simply. They did two things.
Mm-hmm.
They started to tweet. They hired a young girl out of North Carolina State, I think it was. And they advertised her around the country. You know, they wanted their tweeter. And she started communicating with customers, talking about Pizza Hut, and she did tours, and people knew who she was, et cetera. And concurrently, then they took the, they had the first, they call it the killer app, the first app where you could make your own pizza online.
Huh.
you could go on, and you could see the ingredients jumping out of the pizza, and they would keep, you know, what you ordered. You could go back and order it again. So Pizza Hut really was in the forefront in terms of using Twitter, using Facebook, and using apps. And that whole quick service industry, McDonald's, is moving aggressively that way. But I think, again, anybody interfacing with customers, no matter what they're selling or what service they're providing, has that same opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds to me like it's just a matter of knowing. I mean, I'm not saying it's just a matter, but it's a matter of knowing your audience and, you know, sort of being creative, I guess.
Exactly. And of course, when you get to the location type incentives,
mm-hmm,
where, you know, as I mentioned with a Starbucks or a restaurant, when you know someone's in the area and you say, if you stop in tonight, you know, we have a special offer for you, and you're building, it's not just a discount, you're building frequency of visitation, you're building customer loyalty.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. A couple more questions. We have about 5 minutes or so left. I actually was wondering about this myself. I mean, can you kind of just talk about the pros and cons, or I don't want to say the pros and cons, but just the differences between using Facebook versus Twitter for a retailer? I know Facebook is what everybody talks about. I just, you know, is there a time when you should use Facebook versus when you should use Twitter?
Yeah, I think Facebook, you know, we've talked about it, and if it has 70% of the market, you know that it has a huge audience and you ought to be on it. But Twitter, as I mentioned earlier, if you take Zappos, and Zappos is $1 billion, as you know, plus online, mm-hmm, started as a shoe company, has expanded. They have 1,500 employees. Now it's an e-commerce business, but they allow 500 of them to tweet, listen to customers and try to solve customer problems. They just set ground, you know, broad ground rules and assume that their associates will handle the customer the way they want them to handle them. So if I go on now and I send a tweet to Tony Hsieh, the chairman, and say I had a problem, he doesn't get back to me. One of his associates will get back and say, Tony's busy right now, but he asked me to get back to you. And all of a sudden, I have a relationship with them, and that's really what Whole Foods does, because Whole Foods on Facebook, they have all the menus and they have recommendations on, you know, what's healthy and what's not healthy, but they're constantly communicating. If you think about reach and frequency, you're getting enormous frequency from Twitter, and you're getting reach from both Twitter and Facebook. I always like to put it in the context of how you would market and how you communicate with people. And so I totally believe that using both of them is very effective, and that those that only use Facebook and don't use Twitter are missing a big opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Sure. We probably have time for about one more question. This actually I thought was interesting is the concept of blogs. We didn't really talk about blogs too much, but did you find that the retailers that you talked to in your book were using blogs? Do they even consider them social media, or in general, what you think?
The answer is that several of them are using blogs. They definitely consider it to be social media. Mm-hmm. Because it's their ability to get their, you know, you could say, well, it's more marketing because it's getting a big message out, but they're also enabling folks that are reading their blogs to comment on them and comment to other people. So I think it's definitely an important part of it. In many cases, in smaller companies, the CEO is the blogger.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to miss one other point. Participation of senior management here is vital. I mentioned Tony Hsieh is the number one tweeter, Twitter on Zappos. Brian Dunn, a $50 billion company, is the number one person on Twitter at Best Buy.
Okay.
That involvement is important.
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, sorry. I think the question also was a little bit about, advertising your products or your merchandise or whatever on other people's blogs, either through maybe putting ads there or, sort of using PR to get folks.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. No, I know that's definitely an opportunity. There are people doing that, definitely.
Yeah.
In other words, it's synergy. If it's a blog that really is related to the business you're in, the type of products you sell, then advertising on that is very important.
Okay, great. Let's see. Well, we probably have about a minute left, so I wanted to thank. Well, first of all, I just wanted to let everyone know that for the questions that we didn't get to, Bernie and Lori would love to answer them. So we were going to send these questions to them, and you'll get to them, correct, Bernie?
Absolutely. We'd be happy to.
Okay, wonderful. But in the meantime, on behalf of Retail Online Integration, I want to thank everyone who attended this keynote session this morning. But I also want to thank our wonderful speakers, Bernie Brennan and Lori Schaefer, and, of course, our sponsor, Bridgeline Digital. I wanted to let you know that if you're interested in discussing anything that you heard during the presentation this morning, we encourage you to visit the Networking Lounge to chat live with other session attendees. Hopefully, you guys will head over there as well. And, of course, please check out the agenda for the rest of the day. Today, we have several wonderful sessions lined up, and we encourage you to view as many as you can. And remember, if you can't watch them live, you can add them to your briefcase and view them at your convenience in the on-demand environment. So have a wonderful day, everyone, and thanks again.